It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
And welcome once again to 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, or as I like to call it, five people who really don't know what they're talking about when it comes to Padres baseball on a week-in, week-out basis.
Yep, the guessers.
Here we are again. Last week, of course, it was doom and gloom. The Padres were coming off five straight losses. I think they had won in Philadelphia, but the season looked to be on the brink. And here we are, 7 wins in 8 games, a 6-1 homestand, and once again, everything is looking bright and positive in Padres world. So let me introduce everybody. We've got Annie Heilbrun and Craig Elston from the Craig and Annie Elston and Annie program.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
We are 4 hours in already from this morning.
Oh, boy.
My co-host, Stephen Woods. Hello, Woodsy.
Hello, Benjamin.
To the end of this
from
hour.
From the Ben and the Higgins and the Woods
show.
Yeah,
the Ben, the Higgins, the Woods show.
And then from the Ello and Gwyn program, Chris Ello is here as well.
Branding, obviously not very important.
Ello and Tony. Edition today's
edition. I'm going to start with a very broad-based, difficult-to-answer question. Someone make it make sense. Can anyone like offer enough insight at this point? We're over halfway through the season. Make the Padres make a little bit of sense at this point. Chris, is there anything that you can say that can make this team somehow fit logically into an explanation in my mind?
I think no, probably not. But I'll take my best shot at it. I think a couple of things are becoming clear to me. First of all, the injuries are part of the reason for this, but I'm not sure this team is really all that great. I think they have a lot of, you know, holes. They're not, this isn't the all-time, you know, superstar ball club that we might think it is. But I think the fight in this team and the chemistry, whatever is working behind the scenes, is allowing it to continue to bob its head above water every time it the talent level starts to sink it. So that's about all I can come up with. They've had a 500 record 25 different times this year. And I'd love to believe that they'll never go back to 500 now that they're 3 games over, but I'm kind of, you know, ready for it.
That's a good stab at it. However, I would say that teams, I mean, we've seen bad teams that are plucky and they show a lot of fight and they get to 500. But generally, those are teams that are overmatched, that don't have enough talent, but they somehow find a way to win some games, have a good record in one-run ball games, get to a good record. That's not exactly right with the San Diego Padres, Craig, though. They have high-priced talent. They have good players on the roster, and they have the fight that Chris is just showing. That should be the recipe for a team that is better than they are right now.
If the high-priced talent was healthy, available, and playing at the level that they were being paid to do, then I would completely agree with you. But to make it make sense, I think it's actually very straightforward. Look at the top of the Padres' payroll. Manny Machado, until very recently, was playing at a level that's not Manny Machado. We know he's recovering from an injury. We know what's going on. But factually, he was putting up, I don't think he's put up half a war, or maybe just about that, for the whole year. Bogarts, negative war player. Darvish, unavailable. Musgrove, unavailable and pitched poorly when he was available. Those are the players you were counting on to have about 5 war between them at this point of the year. They've added up to less than 2. So when the top is misfiring and the rest of the roster has been so good, you get this 500 melange, but now it's been combined with what I do agree is a team chemistry that is shown through now.
So I think what Craig is saying, Woods, is that we see a team that is pushing at the luxury tax threshold and we think high-priced team, but maybe it would be better to view this team as one of the lower payroll teams in baseball because they're not getting the money's worth out of the players they're actually spending the money on.
Yeah, and you do like where some things are trending as far as like where Manny's going. But for me, it's the I've been saying all year, if you can hang around in a pretty weak NL, nobody wants to face this team. Nobody. I mean, they're beating good teams. They lose to the crap teams. And that's the one that makes the sides of my head go gray. You know, I mean, and I, we know them, we follow them, we see what they're capable of. I don't really see any less effort against the Angels or the Mets. I don't see any lack of effort or want to. You know, I just, there's no way to explain what's going on, but I they have given us already so many more moments this year than last year. They're an infinitely more fun team to watch, and the unsung heroes, you know, the Higgies and the Tyler Wades and the Jackson Merrills and those guys have been a delight to watch, and they have really carried some of those stars' asses this year. They really have. And we are always going to be filled with the promise of, well, what if Xander comes back and is Silver Slugger Xander, and what if Manny goes on one of his, you know, every year tears, and what if you gets healthy? Yeah, and as long as there's a what if, it keeps me coming back every night because these guys are pretty fun to watch.
Annie, I think some of the things that I usually apply to a baseball team, like when you have a long stretch of games with almost no off days, and then you're hit with a rash of injuries. I know what that means. I've covered baseball long enough. That means your team is about to go in a big tailspin. Until they can get healthy, until they can get some days off, expect 8 losses in 10 games. Well, last week, both of those things hit at the same time for the Padres. Injuries, tiredness after 26 games in 27 days. This should have been a bad week for the Padres. Why was it a good week?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways this team has overperformed, which sounds crazy sometimes because in a lot of ways they've underperformed. But when you look at the injuries, you look at losing Fernando Tatis Jr., you look at Darvish, you look at Xander being out, and you really didn't miss, you didn't feel hit with that this last week like you thought you would when you heard that news coming in. And so there's sometimes that you're watching the team and you're like, oh my God, this team is 500. Amazing. How did they get to 500? And then there's other days that you watch the team and you're like, oh my gosh, this team is 500. What in the world? I think part of the disconnect is that this is the organization and the clubhouse and the manager have all promised essentially a playoff run and a World Series, you know, at least attempt. And so I think that if this was a team that maybe that wasn't, you know, the expectation, we'd all be like here, oh my gosh, look at all the injuries they've overcome. They're so scrappy. But it's the other way around. But I will add this. I agree with you. I think that as abysmal as sometimes they've played this season or it's looked, they're in a good spot. If they can take off from this point, the rest of the NL just hasn't done enough to get ahead of them. They're in a good position to take off. They're also in a position to be overcome by injuries and not take off.
You know, and he brings up the point, too. And I saw on Twitter, you know, the Nationals media was very salty about everything that went down since they got to town. And I saw even their media saying, oh, congratulations. You're beating a team that's not even trying to win this year. You know, we're rebuilding and revamping. And we have nearly identical records. Two ways to look at teams that are, you know, have a different payroll, that have different types of players on it. That point that you made of that is, it absolutely rings true. These guys are absolutely trying to make the playoffs. They want to. They're not. I do look at them as a plucky team. I do look at them as a team with a ton of fight. But they are absolutely expected to win. We all expected them to win this year.
And they should have that expectation.
They should have that. Yeah, 100%.
Let's talk about how the Nationals and Padres series played out with the benches clearing on Tuesday night and then the response by, obviously, Manny Machado and Jurickson Profar with their bats. But there was never an incident where a Padres pitcher threw at a Nationals player. I don't know if they feel like it's over or not. We heard the comments from Mike Schilt and some of the players after the game. Annie, was that situation handled the right way by the San Diego Padres? Let their bats do the talking, but we've yet to really see any, you know, retaliation from a Padres pitching staff member.
I think that you let the bats do the talking. I think you go out there, you win the game. The worst thing that would have happened for the Padres is they don't win that game. And for them to go out there and sweep the Nationals, I think that they did enough talking like that. I like the fact that they were there. They backed up Jurickson Profar. And I do think it was smart. If Profar would have been thrown out, that grand slam wouldn't have happened, at least not by him, obviously. And who knows if they would have won that game. And so, should they go out and start something? I'm not really into that, but at the same time, it is sometimes a mentality thing when you have pitchers throwing at guys' heads or throwing in at Tatis that you want to show that you're backing your players, and that can go a long way sometimes with an identity of a clubhouse and feeling united.
Chris, the winning is obviously very satisfying to emerge from that series with a sweep after everything that went on. But could the Padres be in danger of gaining a reputation that they're a team that can be pushed around a little bit?
I don't think so. A couple things. First of all, I think Manny stepped in, and stepping in and giving Ruiz a shove, that was a loud statement as far as I was concerned. You know, I mean, this guy's just pretty much having a conversation with Profar. He does put his hands on him. Jerkson's pretty calm. But I thought Manny coming in and saying, hey, wait a second. No. I thought that went a long way, and I think it will go a long way. Secondly, I do think they missed an opportunity the other night because of this. The umpires allowed Mackenzie Gore to get away with, I believe, intentionally hitting Profar by saying, well, he just hit him in the leg, so we don't think it meant anything. If that was truly the case, then Adam Mazur certainly should have at least hit Ruiz in the leg in the next inning. And let's see what the umpires do about that.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling he would have been kicked out.
100%.
Which would have probably brought Mike Schilt out from where he was already kicked out to get kicked out again.
And glasses.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
he's in street clothes at that point.
Right. The umpires, you know, really left everything wide open for a retaliation. You know, going back to your thought, I would like to see some Padres pitch up and in a little bit. We haven't seen hardly any of that. And but I do think this team has each other's backs. I don't know that everyone else knows that, though.
Craig, Bob Scanlon said on the TV broadcast he could see it both ways, that the Washington Nationals, he could see how they got a little perturbed by the celebration from Jurickson Profar on Monday and the way that that played out. Is this a two-side situation? Or some people are saying, hey, the Washington Nationals were in the wrong here. Padres can celebrate all they want when they walk off a game on their own field.
Oh, you know, we talked about this on Wednesday's show on Annie and Elston. I think if you own your own actions, then you can actually point to where somebody doesn't own their actions. The Padres can own the fact that on Monday, when Jurickson Profar hit a walk-off hit, instead of running to second base to claim his rulebook double, he turned around to the third base dugout to say very loudly to the Nationals his displeasure in, you know, various languages. And then he continued that out to the crowd and fired up the crowd. And that's a big celebration for June 24th. Okay, I think everyone in baseball can agree that the Nationals would have a reason to at least have thoughts about it. Right now, what was their action? It was to hit Profar the next day. And what did they do? They hit Profar the next day. The umpires failed to do their job by getting, you know, Mackenzie Gore thrown out of the game. That was the proper response. Also, the Nationals didn't take ownership of their actions. They're like, oh, nothing happened. Oh, pitch got away. We all know that's a lie. Everyone knows that's a lie. But what the Padres did in response was immediately homer and take about 5 minutes to go around the bases, like almost a wrestling celebration from base to base. I think the Padres got their evenness, not with a pitch up and in, but with a couple of homers and some very, very slow trots.
You know, it's interesting, just kind of thinking back, it's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza Woods. The Padres have been kind of on the cutting edge the last few years in changing baseball culture. Go back to 2020, when Fernando Tatis Jr. swung at a 3-0 pitch and hit the home run. And initially, the old schoolers kind of said, oh, you don't do that. And then about 90% of baseball came to go, yeah, I think you actually do that nowadays. The swag chain was the first of the home run celebrations that have become now ubiquitous around baseball with props and other teams. That would have never been stood for 15 years ago in Major League Baseball. And now the, you know, the walk-off celebration and how the Padres handled it, you start to see more and more people go, I like the way the Padres play baseball. I want to see more of that, not less of that, around the major leagues.
Trevor Plouffe said it really well yesterday. And it's always fun when you say something on the air and then later you see, like, I said the exact same thing Trevor Plouffe said, and then he said it later. Not, he wasn't listening to me. We just had the same thought of, hey, man, Davey Martinez and Jesse Winker and Keibert Ruiz, when that ball hit the grass, you should have been off the field. You're standing there, you're looking for something, and you got it. And Hunter Harvey went 97 under his chin, and then you get the walk-off. Bro, you can rest assured at my house with a huge win like that, I'm going to be beating my chest. I'm going to be looking you right in the eye, and that's okay. That's how it's supposed to be these days. Trevor Plouffe, you know, came up a while ago, and he's like, you can celebrate any way you want. Brett Boone said the same thing on our show. I thought, when you're looking for something, you'll find it. And they did, and they were distracted the entire series. Jesse Winker going into the stands to harass an old man that called it Bush League. Like, no, they're not trying to hit him, but 97 of the chin is still 97 of the chin, and I loved how they handled it. I did. I'm like a bloodlust guy. I want my payback, but boy, those three wins certainly sat really well with me. I thought the Nationals handled it poorly. I thought their media was ridiculous about it. They probably feel the same about us, but hey, man, just look. None of our players went to the stands. None of our players threw at anybody's head. You know, that's the right way to do it.
I think, Annie, some people, do they react poorly to the Padres' swagger because the Padres don't have a World Series ring? And like, hey, you haven't earned anything yet. But at the same time, you know, just because the Washington Nationals won one in 2019 doesn't make them any more credible about baseball opinions than everybody else. Great. You got one with a whole entire roster of different players 5 years ago. That has no relevance to a series in 2024.
Yeah, I think that baseball's supposed to be fun, and you have so many teams now that are doing the things that the Padres really, like you said, started off doing. Fernando, you know, with that big stutter step, being a showman out there, having fun with the fans. Now you see other guys in the outfield doing the same thing. There is an excitement to the game that comes with this. Michael King said a few weeks ago, he was asked about what it was like to watch Fernando Tatis Jr. when he was with the Yankees, and he's like, I hated the guy. He was too showy. And he's like, now I'm over here. I love it. I get it. I see what he's all about. But that's kind of what you're trained to do as an opposing player. You know, like you need a chip on your shoulder. You need something that's going to get you going, or as an opposing fan. So I think the more you back it up with play, obviously, like if you keep doing this and you don't win, I think then that's a little, you know, that's the road you don't want to go down. But if you can play well, I don't see any problem with having fun out there on the field.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Keibert Ruiz may turn into something, but he's not anything right now. You know, he's a negative war player. And for him to put his finger in Jurickson Pro for a 10 years in the show and start poking him in the chest and telling him about the right way to do things, absolutely unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And
wasn't it very Brian McCann, Carlos Gomez?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Stopping you at home plate
to give you an earful.
Hang on a second. Next time you round those bases,
you better do it faster, yeah, you better do it my way. Yeah. And I don't like that at all. Again, Profar may be having the season of his life, but you don't stay in the big leagues for 10 years if you're not a good player. You just don't. We've seen really good players not make it to that 10-year mark. That dude's earned everything he's got, and for him to poke his chest and, oh, no, this is how we like your celebrations to be at your house, it's unacceptable. And you're right, Ello. I saw the same thing with Manny. It wasn't a, hey, bud, grab one. It was get away. You know, I thought, sorry about that. I don't want to ruin this nice shirt here. But it was.
I earned that.
It was forceful. You know, it was forceful. It was like, nope, this isn't going to happen. I thought that was a really cool moment. And then, obviously, the home run was top Manny Machado moment of all time. It was unreal.
Can I just throw in your comment about the Padres inventing the swag chain and the ubiquitous celebrations that are now throughout baseball? I've been laughing the entire time, because I'm picturing Mickey Mantle being pushed in a shopping cart through the dugout at Yankee Stadium, waving his arms after a home run with dark glasses on.
Right.
It's just the most laughable thought of all time, but now it is totally accepted.
It is.
It's a TikTok video.
Well, I mean, but, you know, back to those old guys.
Hank Aaron with the swag chain.
It'd be amazing. Yeah. Hank Aaron just spinning it. It'd be great.
Adam Jones on your show, Ben Woods, saying he didn't pimp his first home run.
He didn't pimp his 100th.
His 100th, right.
He goes, you couldn't pimp one.
No.
Now, Manny would say the same thing.
Right. But you ask, is that truly the best way, or is that just the way we've always done it? Because, listen, Mickey Mantle, those guys, they had fun. They just did it in a different way than our guys had fun. I'd rather our guys be spinning swag chains than out at Toots Shores till 6 a.m. drinking 400 rum and Cokes and smoking a pack of Marlboros. Honestly, like, I really would. It's if you're going to have fun playing the game of baseball, which, by the way, is entertainment, I know we take it very seriously, they're entertaining, if nothing else.
Let's get on the field a little bit. 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Let's talk about the Padres catching situation right now. It's very simple. Kyle Higashioka is playing because he has to play, and he's playing great. He has hit 7 home runs in the month of June, but Luis Camposano will be back, probably sooner rather than later, maybe even before the end of the upcoming road trip. Chris, when Campy is back, how do you determine playing time going forward in the Padres catching core?
Pretty simple. I mean, if Higashioka keeps hitting like this and Camposano comes off the bench for a while, they reverse roles, at least for the time being. I would think it's not, you know, for the rest of the season, unless Higashioka is going to hit 7 home runs every month the rest of the season and finish with 30. But yeah, you got to ride a hot hand, don't you? And it's not like Camposano been lighting it up. So, I mean, you know, if I'm Luis Camposano right now, you know, I'm a little bit concerned about my job, because you've got to go with what's working, and Higashioka is working at the moment.
Yeah, but generally, Craig, you know, backup catchers.
Isn't he better defensively, too,
much
do you
better,
think?
Yeah, or much better.
Right? I mean, so, okay. So.
But generally, Craig, backup catchers are backup catchers for a reason.
Chris, you're better defensively.
They don't all of a sudden become all-stars overnight, and I'm not expecting that from Higashioka, but there's room for a more balanced starts for the catchers, even when Campy's back.
Well, I agree with Chris, but let's define what it means to reverse roles, because Kyle Higashioka was already catching 40% of the starts for the Padres. He was catching every Waldron start and every King start, right? So to me, when Camposano comes back, one of the three spots that used to be Campy's goes over to Kyle for now.
Probably Vasquez, I think you've got another former teammate of his.
Yeah. Either that, or you've got to use Higashioka against lefties. Camposano still, I don't think, has had a hit against a left-handed pitcher since April.
You are completely right. So Higashioka plays against lefties / gets that third slot until he cools off and or Campy heats up. Because eventually, if you overplay Kyle Higashioka, that's the point you're driving at. You will wear him out. I believe he's averaged, we'll get into this on our show later too, but I think he's averaged around maybe 250, 260 plate appearances. So, you know, when you get into 470 plate appearances for Kyle Higashioka, you might wear him down.
May not look good. It may not look good at the end. But you asked today, you know, is there a catcher's controversy? No, there's no controversy at all. I mean, Kyle Higashioka is your starter right now until he's not. And nobody gets through the season with one backstop back there. But when Campy does come back, yeah, it's imperative that he hits and that he plays defense and you know, doesn't take plays off, you know, late in the game. Sometimes when you're watching, it's like, man, that's a weird time for a brain fart there from Campy. And Kyle is, you know, he's not Salvador Perez back there. He's not Johnny Bench, but you want to talk about a really reliable fill-in under some pretty gnarly circumstances of changing teams, having to catch a knuckleballer, and then now to add the offense on there. He's been awesome.
But Annie, I thought it was interesting that after two emotional, hard games on Monday and Tuesday, and then a day game after that, the easy thing is, all right, it's Brett Sullivan's turn,
yeah.
And yet Kyle Higashioka was back in there. It kind of shows you that Mike Shild is willing to maybe push him a little bit more and ride that hot hand a bit.
Yeah, he's earned it. Very a la Jorge Alfaro, Gary Sanchez, Kyle Higashioka follows the long line of improbable catchers who have made an impact in this organization. But no, I agree. I think that you ride him. He is the hot hand. You give him, if you're looking at 50-50, you give Kyle Higashioka the extra start.
Yep, 60.
Over, yeah, you go 60-40. And you do need to get Camposano going. If you're going to make it deep into the playoffs and get on a World Series run, like, you have to get Camposano going, so you need to get him back in there and working. But I do think you ride Kyle, not into the ground, but a little bit more.
Interesting you brought up Jorge Alfaro, who was such an important part of the chemistry and karma and magic of 2022, and couldn't even get on the field in the postseason.
Correct.
Not one single day.
Not one game.
And what happened there?
Yeah. We still don't quite know exactly what happened there. But
we're extending the show an hour today to dive into that.
We are going to kill Austin Nola before we put Jorge Alfaro anywhere near a postseason game.
Yeah, that was weird.
All right, speaking of hot hands, and the guy who's had the hot hand all season, and I teased this question earlier in the week, but Jurickson Profar continues to play like an all-star, maybe the top National League outfielder as we head toward the all-star break. He is under contract, a very, very favorable contract for just this season only. But I think a lot of people would like to see him back for next year, maybe even more years to come. Annie, let me start with you. What would a fair contract offer look like right now for a Jurickson Profar extension?
Ben, you're killing me.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't want to imagine a team without Jurickson Profar. I really don't. I don't know what the heck this market will pay. I don't know. I can't even. I was thinking, should he get the same as he was getting before he went to the Rockies, like $9 million a year? Should it be $12 million a year? $12 million for 2 years, something like that? He undoubtedly provides so much value to this team. I think about what would have happened if he would have been on last year's team. That team, I think, would have been way better. They could have had a much deeper run or a playoff run in general, right? But the truth is, and I hate saying this, he's 31 years old. He's got a chronically bad knee. He provides value to this team. But if the market goes nuts, I don't think the Padres can afford to do that. So I guess I'm somewhere in the $12 million, maybe 2 years, 12, 2 years, 24, something like that.
It's a lot.
Is that a lot? I don't know.
I don't know. This is such a dilemma.
I want a massive raise if I'm him. I want a massive raise.
And he deserves it. That's the other thing. He deserves every penny he should get.
If you're Jurickson Profar, do you want to go anywhere else?
Right.
You know, part of your value is the fact that your willingness to go and play for a different team, and that has never worked out very well for Jurickson. Chris, he plays well for the San Diego Padres and the San Diego Padres only.
Seems like it. I like Annie's contract, honestly. I think a two-year, $25 million offer. Either take it or we're shipping you back to the Rockies. He'll sign in a heartbeat. Because I think you're right. I mean, he really does love it here as much as we love having him here. So you have to take advantage of that a little bit. Because if it's wide open, somebody might go out and do a three-year $40 million thing that the Padres can't handle.
Yeah. I mean, who has the leverage here?
Both sides have a little bit of leverage. I heard you guys talking about this the other day. I always love when we get the advance notice on this stuff. So I'm going to play off something you guys said, and I'm going to add in this is A.J. Preller. And what does A.J. Preller love to do? He loves to create kooky reverse risk contracts.
Yeah.
All right? We're going to offer Jurickson Profar a 1+1+1. In the first year, guaranteed, he gets Eric Hosmer's money. He gets $13 million. He gets $13 million. We've already had in the budget.
Could it literally be Eric Hosmer's money?
Wish it could. But that line item that's been in the budget for the last 3 years that's just been sitting there, 13 for nothing.
Keep it.
Becomes 13 for Profar for a year.
Remember, there's one more year of that 13 for nothing still.
Gosh darn it. really cursed.
Yeah.
But okay. Darn it. That really makes my position worse.
That was three darn it's, by the way.
So then player option for year two at $8 million, player option year three at $5 million. So if Jurickson Profar is not the player that he has been, he's got a guaranteed three-year deal for his family. And if he is the player he's been this year, he's getting 13 and he's going back out on the market.
Does he want to go out and do that again? Does he want to go out and take $1 million more than he could get from the San Diego Padres and go play in New York or St.
Louis? Does he have another chance?
Does he have another chance to make money? Right, and if
this could be his chance,
if he does have that chance, he should take it. He's got a family to provide for. He doesn't owe us anything. He doesn't owe the San Diego Padres anything.
But $1 million a year can provide for his family. I kind of like how we throw that around. He needs to provide for.
But not when
you're making $10 million as opposed to 12. His family's going to be okay.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, this is another opportunity for him to cash in. But it didn't work well for him last time. It didn't. He made the money. He got the money, but it was not a fit for him. And he's performing like a $25 million a year player right now. So be hard pressed. Hey, man, I know that your ratings are good, and this is what this guy makes with these ratings. We're going to give you 1/50th of that. It doesn't necessarily work that way. So it's definitely mutually beneficial. If I'm him, I'm like, I want to stay. I want to stay. But at what cost? Does he really want to go to St. Louis or anywhere else? Texas, you know,
and
Oakland.
And if you give him $25 million to play, now what is it like when Jurickson Profar gives you a 98% Jurickson Profar season instead of a 200% Jurickson right. Profar season.
Right.
Now everyone's looking at him as the problem of the team
the problem.
That's sinking the payroll.
Yep.
There's a mess on all sides of
there
it.
There really is. It's a bad problem. It's a good problem to have, I guess.
Let me give you my theory, my option, and that is Jurickson Profar, San Diego Padre for life. And you extend the contract out 6 or 7 years, front load it, you know, in the $12 to $14 million range early, and then it starts tapering off. So by the time he's 35, 36, 37, you're paying 2 to 3 for a pinch hitter that was probably going to be a pretty good pinch hitter maybe at age 35 and 36 late in his career, and will continue to give you the vibes that he seems to provide so well. He will be a fixture at the end of that dugout, a fixture in the lineup, hopefully for the next couple of years as a starter, and then a fixture in the dugout and in the clubhouse and with a switch hitting bat that comes off the bench just when you need him when he's 35, 36 year old, but you don't need him on those knees all the time. Right. Doesn't need to play every single day, but he's still giving you what seems to be that magic Jurickson quality.
We might have this contract.
We might have a team full of those guys, though.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, we're just setting up for, like, 5 years from now, the aged and infirmed Padres.
It's
and
like,
we're sitting here every day going,
36-year-old do I want to go to?
Every one of these guys is done, and what do we do?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the sentimental, this is more than sentimental with Jurickson Profar because he's actually providing a lot of value, right?
Exactly.
This is not, I really like this guy and his smile's worth this to me. And
he's their best player.
He's their best player. But, right, you know, you look at it and go, is this, as Mike Schilt likes to say, is this an outlier? I mean, and based on his last, you know, he's had a couple of good seasons. It's an outlier based on his career.
Yeah. It has to be looked at that way.
Right. And so the sentimental contract being doled out, is that the best way to handle business? You've already made some mistakes and maybe some contracts that aren't going to work out in your favor. I don't know, man. It's going to be hard for me to see him anywhere else. It feels like he was meant for this place. He feels that you'll see his number out there someday, really. Like, he has provided so much to this team, and he's so beloved in this community, and he loves this community in return. But, man, they don't have unlimited money to burn.
No, and maybe the last point to make on this, Ben, is that there's still time.
Jurickson, yes.
Because like 3 weeks, and I too completely agree. Profar is the puzzle piece at the center of the Padres puzzle. He doesn't fit in every puzzle, but he fits here.
Yeah.
He fits here perfectly, and without it, our puzzle is incomplete. Like, we need Jurickson Profar on this team. A month ago, he had an OPS of like 950 or 980. Now it's a little under 900. By the end of the year, it may be in the low 800s, but it's still a great season, but it's not one you have to pay $25 million for.
Keep in mind also that the Padres upper, you know, front office wants to start replacing the older players with cheaper, younger players, but there aren't really any prospects in the outfield that are coming up right now for the San Diego Padres.
Homer Bush.
Yeah, they're all gone. So if you have to replace Jurickson Profar, right now the only places you can do it are free agency or probably a really expensive trade. So Jurickson's value in that sense and his leverage is pretty high. There's no one knocking on the door to replace him in the outfield. It's not like the shortstop position where, you know, there's plenty of options down the line at shortstop. Not in the outfield for the San Diego Padres right now.
And he is playing through a knee injury that is very painful. I mean, and I don't think that means that he's going to have to, like, that's going to ruin his numbers or anything like that. But, like, he's been managing that for a few years. I think he can continue to manage it. I don't know why sometimes we look at certain players and we're like, hey, but, you know, he's a gamer and he plays through an injury and let's give him all that money. And then other players were like, oh, it's just Jurickson Profar and now he's not going to be able to provide. Like, he's doing what the other guys are doing that are getting paid money. Just
real money.
Right, real money.
If he keeps hitting like he's hit,
why isn't this not enough? Like, he's already gone half the season hitting like he's hitting. Like,
do you always make a 6 or 7 year contract on a half year? That's how you make bad deals. Baseball executives have to make big money deals, and they have to make it cold hearted and evaluate right on the razor's edge. What I'm saying is, though, I'm trying to back your point. If he continues, if he is at the end of the year a top 35 player, he won't be on the Padres because that value is worth more than the Padres can afford to pay him next year. And he would do himself a disservice not to take that money for his family and for his future. It's just the nature of it that when you have a career OPS of 721 and you're at 920 halfway through the year,
that it's going to level out.
I get that. No, if the money shoots way over what they can pay, he has to go somewhere else.
To Craig's point, I mean, this is crazy. We had our fantasy baseball draft in my league, which is going on for 10, 12 years, right in this very room. And I sat over there, and we were in the supplemental draft. The entire draft had already been done. And I looked around the room, and I said, wait a minute. Nobody's taking Profar, right?
Yeah.
And they said, no. I said, okay, I'll take him.
I'll take him.
It's about the fourth round of the supplemental draft. Now, here's where my point is to back Craig. If I sit in this very same room next year and you restart the draft and we're in the first round, would I take Profar? Hell no. But if somebody else did, I'd have to let him go because I wouldn't be willing to bet my season on Profar as my number one pick. And I think that's what Craig's saying. The Padres can't pay the kind of money if somebody else really wants to pay him for this season alone.
Yeah, if his OPS is 850 at the end of the year, he's going to cash in.
Yeah.
And you know, what's it worth to him, though, to stay, be a part of this team, to be with these guys? These guys are his brothers. I mean, it's a real thing. I mean, we all know we would take less to live here and not have to move somewhere else for more money, to go to Cincinnati to do mornings or afternoons or middays. We know that. Baseball players, I mean, their window is shorter. We can do this for another 20 years if we're lucky.
Right.
He's got four more years to cash in until he is washed up and out of the game.
He was a year from being out of the game this year.
This year. Yeah, truly.
That's how close he was to the edge.
It's really one of those tough decisions they're going to have to make.
We used to hear about the San Diego discount all the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of died in the big spending recent years under Ron Fowler and Peter Seidler. But if there was ever maybe a candidate for the San Diego discount just a little bit, it might be Jurickson Profar.
Let's hope.
All right, it is about 36 minutes in. It's our San Diego Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Now it's 37 minutes in, Craig.
It was literally correct.
And I was going to throw out a great seventh inning stretch that was catered just for you. But actually, it was Woods' suggestion, so I'm going to do it anyway. Off night last night, now an off day for the San Diego Padres. They've been few and far between. Now that you've got a couple of extra hours tonight, where you don't have to watch baseball, what show are you currently turning on? What are you catching up on that you've been missing? How do you use this extra time when there's no Padres baseball tonight? And since you have always been our streaming recommendations guy, Craig, I will start with you.
Okay, well, and that it's going to be good because now I'm going to put Steven in the heater here because I'm going to take his. You should be watching The Bear.
Yes.
The Bear is back. Season 3 just dropped yesterday. I couldn't start it yesterday because of other commitments and such. And first thing was he asked me, was like, have you started The Bear yet?
Oh.
The Bear has been one of the best shows on TV the last 2 years. I think it's now grown in enough acclaim through the Emmy Award wins and you know, enough notoriety that now maybe it's more of a thing, but it's becoming a summer thing. Like each summer you get to go to check out the latest from The Bear, which follows a group of people creating a restaurant in Chicago. And it started with a guy's brother's restaurant that he was taking over who had committed suicide. And that was season one. Season two, they're building their own restaurant. Season three, now they got to run that thing.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be one of the best shows of the year, and I can't wait to start it soon.
I started it last night. It was amazing. The first episode was, they didn't talk a lot. I'll just leave it at that. It was like this beautiful procession and flashback. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. The show is amazing. I love it. I'm going to continue watching Presumed Innocent on
which
Apple
I'm up
TV,
to date with, and I agree.
Is awesome.
Yeah, it's really
Jake
good.
Jake Gyllenhaal is in some legal trouble, and he's an attorney. It's really, really, really good.
It's the old movie. You probably saw the Harrison Ford movie.
My wife gave it a thumbs down, but I'm going to have to override her.
Oh, yeah, override your
it's
wife.
It's been good so far.
It's really good.
Annie,
I'll
what's
probably start that, but I'm good. Basic. Below Deck.
Below Deck?
I'll just catch up on Below Deck.
You and my wife. Good God.
Chris, I know you got a lot of reality TV as well.
I was going to say, Annie, please come over and take my spot. Watch Below Deck and all the Real Housewives with my wife. I this is going to be a nerdy answer, but I really like the show America's Got Talent.
Wow.
I tape it every Tuesday. I watch it throughout the rest of the week. I love to see normal people do extraordinary things.
This isn't the Round Table anymore. This is the Chris Ello.
I love this, Ello.
This is the Chris Ello get it off my chest
hour. Of a piece, though. It is
amazing.
A singing telegram guy wants to see that type of spontaneous singing talent.
Some of these people are really, really good at what they do.
You watched Star Search back in the day.
I didn't watch that.
I did.
I watched that.
I really like the format of America's Got Talent, and I'm a fan.
A guy came up to me in the stands on Monday, I kid you not, and asked when the Ellograms were coming.
I gotta have
a singing telegrams. And
you've got to start a cameo. You will make easily $2,000 this month.
Easily.
Just on that.
Easily.
All right, I will finish up, and while I will say I was hugely disappointed with the final season of Game of Thrones and didn't necessarily love the first season of House of the Dragon, I think the show is continuing to get better and better. And I've started watching season 2, which is dropping each week on Max. And I am starting to get hooked again on the world of Westeros and the intrigue and the drama of the, you know, the prequel to the Game of Thrones saga that is currently airing again, and the new stories of the Targaryen family, the House Targaryen, and the new war of the Dance of the Dragons, and the entire story of Rhaenyra and the Two Crowns that's going on right now. So that's my current watch and what I've got right now.
I haven't started season 2 yet. I heard about a scene at the end of the first episode, and it made me not want to watch. So
it's gruesome, but that's what you get when you sign up for the Game of Thrones.
Wanton cruelty.
Goose Goss was right about you.
Yeah. Bit of a nerd.
That's why I love you so much.
He's a nerd. I'm the one that's why I
love.
Got
no, you're that's why I love you're cool.
Yeah, you're good.
All right, let's look forward. All-Star Game is coming up. I know Kyrie Profar is trying to get his dad to the game, and I think he's going to be successful.
We
at
have
that.
To get Kyrie to the game
and his
outfits
and
his swag. It's going to be Kyrie's All-Star game.
Him down watching the Home Run Derby is going to be elite.
Fox is going to fall in love with him.
Oh yeah,
on the broadcast.
Oh,
you can see him 17 trillion times, and I'm here for it. The question though is, does Paul Skeens deserve a spot in the All-Star game? Despite only making a handful of starts in a Major League Baseball career, they've been very, very good. Is there a spot, Chris, for a young rookie who does not have the necessarily time put in yet to be an All-Star, but would certainly attract some eyeballs and attention to the All-Star game?
I don't know. They didn't put Caitlin Clark on the Olympic team. I guess they weren't that interested in those eyeballs. But I think Major League Baseball should be interested in showcasing a guy like Paul Skeens. So I would say yes, for sure, as long as when the season's over, he still finishes behind Jackson Merrill in the Rookie of the Year balloting. Because Merrill's put in a full season playing every day.
So you're telling me Paul Skeens is going to take Matt Waldron's All-Star spot, is what you're telling me. Because Waldron's outpitched him and been there the whole year.
Yes.
And Skeens has only been there for a handful of games. And
you just turned it into a nasty dilemma, Craig.
Yeah. I did, as soon as you said it, I'm like, gosh, you're right. And it's going to come at the expense of our dude.
Matt Waldron has gotten enough attention lately that I hadn't even really considered that possibility until you just brought it up. But you're right. I mean,
they ought to at least have Matt Waldron go out and throw the Home Run Derby this year to make it kind of tougher on these.
No doubt.
No one will be able to hit any if he throws knuckleballs out there.
What was it? I think we looked it up. He's like 27th in F4 among all pitchers and starters in baseball. He has been an ace in baseball this year.
Annie, what about you? Paul Skeens, darling of social media now, famous girlfriend.
Right, they want Livy down there.
Throws 102 miles per hour.
I mean, he's been great, right? I don't have a problem with it. I think just because he's a rookie, if he deserves it, he should go. And the All-Star game can get pretty boring, to be honest. So maybe you do throw a guy like that in there who's also pitching really well. Like, hasn't been there the whole first half of the season, but is pitching really well. I would also vote for Waldron. But I also say then, okay, go put Jackson Merrill in because he's also having a really good season. I don't know if it's All-Star numbers, but if we're just doing it for excitement, the guy's going to give some great quotes.
He's one of the top three outfielders in the NL.
And there you go. So his numbers are there also.
I think it'd be fair to take Fernando's spot since Fernando probably had earned it with his play of late and now won't be able to go because of the injury. Replace him with Jackson Merrill.
And Jackson's earned it.
Paul Skeens is an
all-star. We wind up with like the third most all-stars.
It's a good thing. We have six all-stars.
It's a good thing for the rest of the National League that we are all not deciding the all-stars.
Paul Skeens, yes, you have to put him in. It's an
about nine Padres on a team that's 500 in the all-star game.
It's an exhibition, and he is... He's unbelievable. Like to his.
I honestly haven't seen him pitch a game
you
yet.
You have to.
When are the Pirates on?
You
right?
have to watch
I only
him
saw the
pitch.
First one.
I haven't
so
seen
he's
him
been,
pitch. So yeah. I, if nothing else, he's I would incredible. Tune in to the All-Star game to watch that.
He's incredible. He's a unit. I mean, he's so much fun to watch. 103, 102, you know, sits 102 in the sixth the other day. Like, he's so dirty. The splinker, the command.
Attitude.
All of it. It's the whole package he's got. And yeah, it's a business and it's marketing. And yeah, Livy Dunn is a huge, huge name. And you want that whole thing. That this is a good thing inherently for baseball that a guy like Paul Skeens is doing what he's doing. And by the way, not his fault he wasn't up with the team. He absolutely earned it. They wanted to manipulate his service time, so they did.
Correct.
And had he started opening day, he 100%. Everyone would have said, oh, this is a no-brainer, yeah. But it's not under his control.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Padres headed to Boston and Texas for their next road trip, and that leads me to our next question. The Boston fans have a certain reputation around America, but is it good? Is that good or bad? And the question really is, who are the best and worst fans in baseball? And you can't say Padres is the best fans. That's too pandering and too obvious. So if you wanted to pick best and worst fan bases in baseball, where are you going? Chris?
Worst?
Worst. We'll start with the worst fan base.
I'm going to the Miami where they don't go to the game.
That's
fair. You know, Oakland's not in contention
anymore.
What
about nastiest?
Yeah, I know. Nastiest, I don't know. But everybody, I when I talked to Tony about where were the world's worst bleacher people were, it was the bleacher bums in Chicago, and so I'll give them the nod as being the most ridiculous and disgraceful. I know Philadelphia gets a bad rap because they booed Santa Claus in 1968 at an Eagles game, but that's almost 50 years ago. I went to one game in Philadelphia, and it so happened to be Tony Gwynn Sr.'s last season and his last game that he was going to play there. They gave him an ovation for the ages. That has always stuck with me.
They know ball.
Right. Yeah. And so, and I'm not saying they're the only ones, but I've always put Philadelphia fans up there. I know a lot of them. I play softball with a whole bunch of people from Philadelphia. They're tough, but I think they're pretty fair. So I'm going to go Philadelphia on the good side.
Craig, let's expand this a little bit, because we think about the fans that are in the stadium, but a lot of fandom is done online now.
Whew.
And if you include the...
And I try to block it all.
The social media aspect of it. I would think that a lot of teams around baseball would say the worst fans in baseball are Padres
fans. Oh, yeah. See it every week.
Online Padres fans.
That's great.
But do we not see the online... Orioles fans? I mean, we see the online
Padres
fans.
We're in our own bubble, right? We follow the Padres people,
yeah,
and then we see the reactions to the Padres people, so I don't know.
I feel like our fans get under the skin of other fan bases as well.
Makes
as
them insane.
Any team in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, you know, this... Thank you for letting me be provincial for a second. Like, this city... You said that we can't pick us, but, like, we back our club. And I think, honestly, that this club has fell under the weight recently, in recent years, of everybody being behind them in this town. And it feels like when they don't have the pressure on them is when you see, you know, when guys are hurt and when you got a kind of a, you know, a B squad together, that they really lock it in. When I think about bad fan bases, I think about fan bases that don't even support you when you're good. Diamondbacks were like doing 2-for-1 deals for World Series tickets.
Crazy, man.
Last year. They couldn't even fill their park when their team was making a run. They didn't give a hoot the last week of the season, and even in the first round of the playoffs. So you gave me a chance to back our fans and rip Arizona, so that was fun. Thank you.
Well, worst fan base in baseball.
The worst. They like the hats, you know. They like the high-priced players that they have. I am engaged with them constantly. There's a few of them that are good.
Yeah.
Good eggs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There's that's
like that 12%.
That's that way.
The other 88% are awful.
Wow.
They're awful.
The lack of baseball general knowledge.
Boy.
yeah. You know, I think for me too, is the way they carry themselves. I mean, I've never seen a team spend as much and accomplish as little as they have ever, in any sport. It's not close. And to act so regal is a little bit embarrassing, and they don't see the embarrassment in it, and they should be very, very, very embarrassed. Like, very embarrassed. It's mortifying. I would have my head between my legs, my tail between my legs, if we, you know, the cover of Sports Illustrated, best team ever, 111 wins, get beat by the Padres. Like, that's mortifying. You're the Bills. You know, that is the worst. We're the best. There's no question. Tuesday night, Monday night, 39,000 people against the Washington Nationals. Give me a break. The Nationals have not seen 39,000 in a weekend series all year.
The quote that Jackson Merrill said about other players coming in, Annie, and going, this is amazing.
It's unexpected. Yeah. It's unexpected. And just being at Petco for this series, it was a reminder to me. Chris Ello and I were talking about it before this show started, because you look around and you just feel the electricity rise in that stadium, and with everything that happened on the field, you feel the fans just behind everything, and you can't help. I talk to players in the clubhouse all the time. What a difference it makes to come to San Diego and feel all the fans behind you. Philadelphia and Chicago, I had great experiences.
You've had a chance to travel with the team a little more recently than I think most of us.
And you've been down by the dugout where the fans have got to be a little tough.
So, what was your kind of experience when you were doing the dugout reporting and occasionally traveling with the team?
I remember the Giants when the stuff was getting thrown on the field near Jerks and Profar.
Yeah,
at you know, I remember that the fans got a little, you know, that was, I didn't like that one, you know, but I really enjoyed Chicago, Wrigley, obviously, and Philadelphia. Philadelphia had great fans. Yeah. They were smart. They were fun. They appreciated the good players of the other team. But I'm trying to think if there was any other, like, nasty ones that I remember. I mean, obviously, yeah, you go for L.A., I'm sure. But I don't remember any, like, really, like, terrible, you know, things being said.
To back up Chicago, just Scanlon told me that when he played for the Cubs, the bullpens then were on the first base line,
awful,
right next to the stands.
Awful.
And when he used to get up to warm up, his own fans would go crazy. Get Scanlon down! Get him down! You know, this is his own fans helping the guy warm up. By the way, Bob Scanlon did save 14 games one season for the Cubs.
Yeah, but
not bad.
But you're also talking about a fan base that packed that place for a million years.
That's
when
true.
Team was terrible.
That's true.
Terrible.
But
true.
I would sit by the dugout, and I think that if you're out there by the bullpen, or you're out there by the, you know, out there in the outfield, we see those videos all the time of fans being
just chirping.
Chirping at players all the time.
I'm not a big chirper out at the ball. I like to just watch the game. I chirp at my TV, but I was around a fan the other day that was chirping, and it made me really like, this doesn't feel great.
I brought it up a few weeks ago. Underrated bad fan base, the sanctimonious St. Louis Cardinals.
St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, well, because they've been
traded.
Because they've been told they're
so
great.
Much better than everybody.
Yes, that hated this.
Just drives me crazy. Yes.
Oh, because they gave a standing ovation to Paul Skeens.
Yeah.
He got so mad. He got so mad about it.
But just so they could get the credit.
They get the credit.
Yes. Aren't they smart?
They are.
Aren't they
soft
smart.
Fan base. Give me a standing O to the opposing
yes.
pitchers.
A guy that is going to shove against you for the next
game.
Horrible.
Actually, that's horrible. What a bunch of softies.
I think so, too.
But they say, we're so smart, we know bull.
No, whatever.
They've been told.
For decades, best fans in baseball in St. Louis. No, you're not.
I know we're real close to the end of the show. I just wanted to say, we're deep into this now, into almost July. I was on my way over here today, and I just thought to myself, I really look forward to this every single week. It's been a really fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
You know, talking this. I know you guys are tired. I know you guys are putting in an extra hour. I'm not really doing anything special.
Really,
driving
an hour off.
2 minutes
they
away.
Taking an hour off.
And getting time off my show.
Wood says the same thing when he gets in at 4 a.m. Going, I'm so glad we've got that extra hour.
Right.
This show really brings out the
no. My point that I wanted to make was I'm enjoying this. But I really think all of us owe a little thanks to Ben.
No doubt.
He puts this thing together every week. And I was just thinking of that. You know, I come in, if I had to work an extra half hour to put the show together, I don't think I'd enjoy it as much. Yeah. So,
oh, he doesn't, by the way. Just trust me. He does an excellent job.
I wanted to thank you for that. And I'm looking forward to, I know we're off next week, right? Because of 4th of July.
Correct.
But I'm looking forward to, you know, continuing this. It's been fun.
2 weeks from today, we'll reconvene. And
yeah.
After one horrible week and one great week.
That's exactly right.
Who knows? Right back.
And 3 days of nothing.
3 days of nothing.
We'll be staring into the abyss.
Back we go.
I love it.
On the definitely not a roller coaster. Roller coaster.
That's right.
Ride.
Can't call it that.
That is the 2024 San Diego Padres. Thank you, everybody. Annie Halbrun, Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, Chris Ello, thank you for those very kind comments. I appreciate it. And somewhere where he is not on vacation but is traveling.
Oh, but he's listening.
Our leader, Adam Klug.
Oh, he's
watching.
Thank
you very much. That's it for us. We will be back in a couple of weeks for a roundtable. If you're listening live, Annie and Elston. Coming up next, it is the San Diego Padres 97.3 The Fan Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.